Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Did you know that we're officially back in a buyer's market? That's right. Even though interest rates continue to rise, they are causing prices to fall. So there's finally room for you to do regular real estate investor things that we couldn't do for so long, like gasp, negotiate, make lower offers, ask for sellers to cover some of your closing costs. So it's a really great time to buy in terms of being able to get a lower purchase price and being able to negotiate. So if you're looking for your first or next short-term rental, it's a perfect time to reach out to us at the Short Term Shop. Let our team of agents in any of our true vacation market destinations help you find the perfect investment. Jump on over to theshorttermshop.com and click Get Connected to get started. We are brokered by eXp Realty. See y'all over there. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Short Term Show. Today, we have Steve Rosenberg on. You've probably heard him a number of different places. He's on Bigger Pockets sometimes. He's got his own podcast, the High Stakes Podcast. He's a really cool guy who does a lot of different things, and I'm really excited to introduce him to you. How's it going, Steve?
It's going good. Good to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you too. It's been about 2 years since I've seen you in person.
Yeah. It's been a minute.
Yeah. So Steve, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So my name's Steve Rosenberg. I've been involved in real estate about 20 years. I hate to say that because it kind of starts dating myself. But I, you know, in all honesty, I never wanted to be in real estate. This was never a plan or a goal. Maybe like other people listening, maybe it's a secondary or tertiary goal of what they're doing. For me, you know, I just wanted to have a regular job and have a career. And that job for me was being an airline pilot. Something happened in history that changed the direction of my life. It changed the history of everything. And that was 9/11. And 9/11 was obviously a pivotal point in history. For me, two days after 9/11 is when my world changed, because that's when I got a furlough notice from the safe, secure airline job that I was always told, hey, if you get hired with the airline. I was 25 years old, second youngest person working for this airline. I was going to retire number two. Everyone's like, you're done. You got it. You're good. And I'm like, I'm good. 3 years later or so, 9/11 hits. I get a furlough notice. And they say, you know what, Steve, that safe, secure job that you thought you had, it was never safe and it was never secure. And you're about to be on the street with 50,000 other pilots. So good luck.
Oh my goodness.
So to say that you get punched in the face, I mean, 9/11 just happened. And now basically I'm going to be out of a job. And the only skill set I have in life is flying an airplane that is really not useful anymore. And it's not like, you know, when you see it, like we'll talk about real estate. When you see a trend happening, that trend comes over time. You can start preparing. This was literally 48 hours. Like I went from the best job in the world on Friday to Monday going, what the hell am I going to do with my life? How am I going to pay my bills? Like, is my whole life useless now? I mean, it was really humbling, I'll say. And so I started looking at what people did that were successful. And of course, in 2001, there was no YouTube or Facebook. So I had to go to this big building with books called a library. I had to get a library card. And I started reading books. And I read a book a week on real estate, because it seemed like everyone that was wealthy was somehow, some way tied to real estate. I read autobiographies. I learned how to, you know, flip, wholesale. They didn't call it that back then, but these essential things, long-term rental. And I started taking action and I just kept going and going. And 80% of the thing I did, I got my ass kicked. I got ripped off. I got lied to. I got cheated. But I kept getting back up because I didn't have a choice. It wasn't like a cool side hobby. It was like, I've got to figure something out. And there was no social media or people to turn to, these fake heroes and gurus and stuff. I had to learn on my own. I eventually started losing less and I started winning more. And I started learning like, okay, don't do that again. Don't make that mistake. And I started learning that my best skill set was definitely not with a hammer. because I suck at that. My skill set was learning how to negotiate and how to communicate. And I got really, really good and very, very focused and dialed in on learning to communicate, which meant I was wholesaling and flipping properties because I was getting deals very, very low and I was flipping them. So that kind of parlayed into doing very well. I bought my first apartment complex with the money that I made. We sold that complex. And, you know, if people don't know, they soon will know. And I learned my lesson that real estate has a interesting way of being a wrecking ball when you mismanage your portfolio. We had about 35 or 40 houses, and it let us know that we bought the wrong properties and had the wrong strategy. And we almost went bankrupt because we thought we were too smart and we thought we knew what we were doing. And again, real estate has a way of correcting that very quickly. It doesn't discriminate, and it will clean your clock. And it did for me and my business partner. We ended up creating a property management company to manage our portfolio because our properties were so horrible that nobody would take them. And they were that bad. Like, no, they're like, we don't want them. Like, these are shitty homes. They're crappy. We don't want them. So, you know, if you're a professional athlete, you have professional coaches. If you're a professional musician, you have musician coaches. I'm like, well, I want to be a professional business person, so I'm going to get a business coach, right? It kind of made sense at the time because I didn't know anything about business. We started a management company to manage our own properties. I got a business coach, my business partner and I. We stayed with that guy for 7 years, built up our management portfolio of over 1,000 single family properties. We spanned across 3 major metropolitan cities. 60% of our workforce was with virtual assistants in Mexico. And we, long story short, which probably isn't that short, we ended up selling to a venture capital firm, cash out. I became a vice president in the firm, did all that stuff, and ended up cashing out. And then I started my venture with helping people with what I've learned over the past 20 years. So that's a summary of 20 years of my life.
Well, that's a lot of things.
Yeah, it is.
And I mean, it's definitely a testament to building kind of a fortress around your W-2 of real estate income before you leave it, whether you choose to leave it or you're forced out, whatever that may be. It's you. I think a lot of people make the mistake of quitting their job before they have that fortress built because it's They're like, oh, cool, you know, I can quit. What do you think about that?
I think that's a mistake. And the reason I say that is, you know, I still am an airline pilot to this day. I fly a Boeing 777 for a major airline. If you follow me on social media, you see all the places I go. I love my job. And a lot of people tell me, they're like, Steve, you know, you've got all this real estate. You sold a business. You coach people. Why do you still fly? And I'm like, where is it written that because I make a lot of money, because I'm successful, that I can't do what I love doing? Now, if you hate your job, different story. Then you picked the wrong. Then you filled out the wrong fucking application in life. I'm sorry, that's your fault. I love being a pilot. I love traveling. To me, it's like why would I quit that? So a lot of people, they're miserable and they're in search of this better life, thinking I'm going to do real estate. That is not going to make you happy. That, like, if you're unhappy, there's a bigger reason you're unhappy. A job is not going to do it because, like everything, it's a monotonous thing you do over and over again. I love traveling the world. I get paid a lot of money to fly a $250 million aircraft all over the world. It's kind of cool, right? It's pretty cool. But, you know, an airline pilot job is obviously different than someone who has a 9-to-5. But back to your point, I am a firm believer. The reason I love my job so much is I don't need it. I don't need the revenue that comes in from my W-2 because I have my assets. I've got my coaching. So I'm not a fan of quitting. Now, again, if you're miserable, then you need to change directions in your life. I just think that if you want to be successful, yeah, you got to go all in and you hear all these people, all this stuff. I get that. But you also have to do what's called minding your business. And minding your business means you work your day job and you mind your business on your off hours, at nighttime, on the weekends. That is when you mind your business. And eventually, once that business overtakes your income or whatever it is to survive, then you're good. I coach a lot of investors and business people. And when I ask people, like, why do you want to quit your job? And they're like, I want freedom. Or, you know, I get a lot of people that are already quit their job and, you know, they're drowning And they're like, I need help. And I was like, why did you quit? And they say they want freedom. I'm like, well, you could sell all your shit tomorrow, go live in the park in your car and have all the freedom you want. But what you won't like is the memories that that freedom creates. We're not buying freedom. That's an illusion. We're actually buying memories. The real estate or the business gives us the revenue to have the freedom to go do what we want. Whether it's, I want to take my family to Greece. I want to see the Rolling Stones in Wembley Stadium. I want to go on safari. I want to just sit around and do nothing. That's the memories we're buying. So I think people have it wrong when they say freedom, because you and I both know a lot of people that have real estate, and the one thing they don't have is freedom. Because I'm like, well, how's that working out for you? They're like, it's not. I'm like, because you jumped the gun. You're gauging freedom. That's not even tangible. Like, what does freedom mean? I don't know when people say that. I'm like, I don't understand what you mean. Like, that makes no sense to me. But that, again, that's just my opinion. I could be way off.
No. I think you're right on. I actually remember I was probably 27. I owned maybe four short-term rentals at that point. And I was driving a client around in my Jeep, which is actually the same Jeep that I still drive. And we were talking about, you know, what the properties make and how much money they're making and what they could expect to make and things like that. And he goes, well, if they make that much money, then why are you still working? And I was like, I don't know. I'm 27. Because yeah. I enjoy doing it. I got to have something to do. Might as well like what I'm doing, right?
Well, and here's my perception of this. People, you know, everybody thinks that it's a destination. Life is a destination. I disagree. Life is a journey. It's kind of like a shark swimming in the water. They don't go to a destination. They're constantly swimming. Our life, the people that you and I are today, I am a different person than I was on 9/13/2001. I didn't grow another arm. I've changed the way I think. I have become a different person through a lot of self-education, training, you know, going to bigger pockets, all these kinds of things. Well, you don't shut that off. You don't become this successful person. I'll share with you, when I sold my business, I swear to God, I thought that I was going to be in like this cool club. Like, I'm going to get a members only jacket. Everyone's going to pat me on the back, you know, with this cool lifestyle. So I sell my business. And yeah, you get the accolades and blah, 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 big check and, you know, well, all that stuff. And Monday morning, my wife is like, you got to take the trash out. I said, but we just sold a business. Like, we're good. She's like, I don't give a shit. You still got to take the trash out. Like, shit has to get done. So it was very like, I don't want to say a letdown, but it's anticlimactic in the sense that I thought that I was a part of this cool, like, new lifestyle. And you know what? Nobody cares. I mean, at the end of the day, nobody gives a shit if you make money, sell a business, you get the pats on the back. And also, nobody cares if you fail. I mean, I hate to tell people that. Everybody likes to victimize it. Not everybody. A lot of people like to victimize themselves thinking that people are going to care about them. And I tell people all the time, like, look, pat you on the back. Sorry, you're having a hard time. But I got my own stuff going on in life. Like, I you know what? You made that. You have to fix it. It's called accountability. And a lot of people, and I think a lot of people coming up, my opinion, there are going to be a lot of people that are blaming, they're in excuses and they're in denial about their real estate holdings because they did not run their business correctly. They didn't mind their business. They either got lazy or they got greedy. And again, real estate, it has a way of self-correcting itself like a wrecking ball. And I think, unfortunately, it's going to be sad, but there are going to be a lot of people that lose everything because they didn't run their businesses correctly.
I think the biggest thing related to that I see is cashing out or doing a cash out refinance and living on your equity or using a cash out refinance to over leverage yourself. And I'm not talking about doing a BRRRR right now. I'm talking about just, okay, my property's appreciated. Let me take out this equity and okay, cool. I can live for the next year and a half. I think that kind of behavior is definitely going to be something that it catches up with people this time around for sure.
Yeah. Again, it goes back to either being lazy or being greedy. And most people, you know, they all of a sudden, you know, real estate, like everything, has cycles. There's summer, there's fall, there's winter, and there's spring. We've had a summer for 7-8 years. It's just been great. Most people, and not to their fault, but they got into this real estate game. And, you know, again, I'm not saying I'm this old school, you know, guy, but I've been in it since 2001. I've seen three market corrections, major ones. And, you know, you see the cycle. I think everybody was on this illusion that real estate is just always, always, always going up. The greater fool theory. I'll buy this, I'll refi it, I'll pull money out, and then I'll flip it. Okay, well, that works for a while until it doesn't. And again, I think that's what we're going to see is people that did these refis, that did all these things, you know, they are going to get burned. Unfortunately, my opinion, I could be way off, because they did not run their business correctly. They ran it, you know, a business runs off data and numbers, not gut feelings and emotions. Real estate is a business. I don't care if you have one property or you have 50 properties, you own a business. And if you don't treat it like a business, I tell people all the time, do we agree that there's rules, laws, and regulations with real estate? Yes. Okay. And you have income coming in, you've got expenses. Yes. So by definition, you're a business. Yes. I'll say, how many people in the room, raise your hand, have a business plan for your business? Crickets. And you wonder why landlords get sued and fail all the time. They don't have a plan, right? How would you like it if I got on an airplane and said, hey guys, today we may go to Hawaii, we may go to London, we may go to Rio. We're not really sure. We're just going to get in the plane and go, and we're just going to see how it goes. How comfortable would you feel? But that's what people do with their money and with their real estate holdings. They have no plan. They've got no destination. And more importantly, they have no goal. They've got no end goal of what they're trying to achieve. They identify themselves as, I do short-term rentals. I do flipping. That is a strategy. That is not the goal. That's like saying, I want to go to Disneyland and I am the 405 freeway. What the fuck? What does that mean? Like, that means not like I flip properties. Like, that's just that's a route to get you to the destination. You're flipping properties for what? What's the goal? And so many people, they don't think past that. They just, again, because laziness and greediness, they didn't take the time to educate themselves and really think, okay, this is a business. And I don't blame them. I think, you know, social media and all this stuff. But if you have a business, why not have a business plan? Why not have an end destination? Why not have a goal? They don't do that. And I think that's why we're going to see a lot of people get corrected.
Well, that was such a nugget that I think we'll just probably go ahead and end the podcast right now.
Drop the mic.
Yeah. You do short-term rentals, but why? And I think a lot of people get caught up in that and they want to be a guru and they want to have like an internet presence and all that. But for what?
For what?
Very good question. What's
the goal? Like, so I'll give you an example. Like when I talk to people or coach them, you know, a goal has to be, you got to have a date, right? It's got to be you got to have a finite end date to the goal. You have to have a way to measure it. And you've got to show how do you know you get there? So if you just say, I want to make passive income. Well, that's stupid because you can make a dollar passive income. Congratulations. So I'll give you an example. Like I'll use people as a baseline and say, how about 20 properties in 20 years, giving you $20,000 a month in passive income. Now we can change that up, but it's a way to say, okay, it's quantifiable by saying 20 properties. And we know what we want it to give off is $20,000 a month. And we have an end date of 20 years. So now what's the strategy to achieve that goal? And now we start working it backwards. We reverse engineer the goal. We say, okay, we want to have 20 properties paid off in the first 10 years so that in the second 10 years, they will be able to pay themselves off. So we buy them in the first 10, pay them off the second 10. That means you've got to buy two properties a year. Every 6 months, you have to buy a property. And that means you pretty much need to identify and close every 3 months because you got to get the make ready done. You got to get it online. And this is, again, I'm talking long-term rental, but that is now the strategy. So when someone comes up to me and they give me a deal and they put it like 2 inches from my face, like that means something. I don't know why people do that. They're like, is this a good deal? I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what your goal is. So if we go back to the 20-20-20, I'll say, okay, each property needs to give you $1,000 a month when it's paid off. Okay, great. The challenge that people have is they're looking at a deal that's $200 a month, $300 a month. I'm like, well, does that get you to the goal? As of today, no. However, what is it going to be in 20 years? Do you need the money today or are you planting seeds for 20 years from now? So many people pass up a deal today. They pass up a deal today based on a future goal. they'll say, this is a bad deal. I don't want to buy this. I'm like, what do you think this house will be worth in 20 years? Oh, it'll be worth a lot of money. And if you use that you know, famed 1% rule, okay. If on the East Coast and West Coast of the United States, properties double in value every 7 to 9 years. In the Midwest, it's every 12 to 15 years. Now, the structure depreciates, but the value goes up. So let's just say we did standard. Let's say you're looking at something in Texas, right? I live in Houston. And I say, okay, this house is $100 a month cash flow. And they go, this is a dog. I don't want this. I'm like, okay, are you buying it for today or are you buying it for a future? Oh, I'm buying it for when I retire, 30 years from now. Okay. Do you think it's still going to be doing the same in 30 years? You're going to have that appreciation is going to go up. You're going to have debt pay down of a tenant paying down that debt. You're going to be able to depreciate the asset. What's the value going to be? Let's say it's a $200,000 house. If it doubles and then doubles again, it goes from 400, then it goes to 800. Now you have an $800,000 asset that is cash positive, owed outright. And if you use the 1% rule, you're getting, you know, let's just say $6,000 a month in cash flow, right? A little less, whatever. How is that a bad deal? It's a bad deal today. That's like planting a little tree in your backyard and going, I want my grandkids to play in the treehouse when this tree grows. And the next day you buy this big fucking treehouse and you put it on the plant. You're like, this doesn't work. This is a bad tree. You didn't let it mature because you didn't buy it for tomorrow. You bought it for 30 years from now. So I think a lot of people, they don't have that goal and they don't know the destination of where they're going. And they never, you know, one of my problems is every time I saw a deal, I bought it. That's a deal. I'm buying it. That's a deal. I was buying it. That was more ego, right? My ego wanted to say like, I own all these houses. No one ever asked me, Steve, why are you buying these properties? What's the goal of buying these? And I take full responsibility. That was all on me. But had I done that, I probably would have started asking myself different questions. And I would have realized that these properties I bought were not going to get me to my goal of having cash flowing high appreciation properties. So I learned that lesson the hard way by almost going bankrupt. So that's why I'm probably more passionate than most people, because I've touched that hot stove and I've been burned. And I know like there's a lot of people out there that don't know. And if I can help them avoid that mistake, that's what I'm trying to do.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying the content of our podcast, but you have additional short-term rental questions, we host a weekly live question session that you guys can join for free. It's at 1 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays. And if you head over to strquestions.com, you can sign up. So not only am I the host of this show, but I also own and manage my own properties, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have about short-term rental investing. So please join us anytime for a free weekly live Q&A on Zoom. Sign up at strquestions.com. So yeah, let's go back to that, because I've been taking a ton of notes while you've been talking, by the way. So you mentioned earlier in the interview, and then again right now, about buying bad properties. So you mentioned that you got in a situation where you had a bunch of properties and no property management companies would take that. Now I'm going to make an assumption here and you tell me if I'm wrong, but were you buying properties that were maybe because they were super cheap and you could pick them up really, really quickly and you could say, okay. And they ended up.
I wrote a book on my story of my life. It was that bad. And people are like, I don't know how you went through it. So I'll give you an example. I'll give you the numbers, right? And this is back in 2005. And so we sold the apartment complex. We had a lot of money or a good amount of money from the sale. And my business partner, who I love to death, I fucking want to kill him sometimes. He's like, dude, he's like, I found these great deals. And I'm like, what are they? He goes, man, they're high cash flow and we can buy them really cheap. They're called low income properties. And I'm like, okay. He goes, we should buy a couple. And I'm like, well, what are the numbers? He's like, dude, it's like 50, 60% cash on cash return. I'm like, what? He's like, dude, I'm telling you, we can get these houses for $40,000 and we can rent them for $900 a month. I'm like, well, shit, why buy one? Let's buy as many as we can. So like in a year's time, and again, this is before all the money was being pumped and syndications and all that stuff. So we buy like 20 something houses like in a year, right? And then we realize why people don't own these properties. Because people start calling with challenges. And those people are called tenants. And they want this fixed and that fixed. And then they leave. Our average tenancy was 8 months in all of our properties. Our make readies were 3 times the amount. Because when our tenants would leave, they would take parting gifts with them, like wiring, electrical, air conditioning units, copper wire, you name it, we would come back to a shell of a property. We went one time to one of our properties and the plants were taken. I'm like, who the hell takes plants? Well, the neighbor did. The neighbor took our plants. So we go back to these properties, and yes, on paper, they penciled out at 40, 50, 60% cash on cash return. When they're rented, they don't stay rented that long. So we had the wrong model. We wanted these passive income properties that we could run from afar with our systems. The problem was, is those are not the properties that work that way. Now, what I did learn though, is one property, we came to closing to get rid of it. I mean, this thing was just a dog. You know, we bought it for like 50 grand, right? It was a 3-bedroom, 1-bath in a lower income part of Houston. And we're like, this thing's got to make money. Like, this is a moneymaker. Well, we never made money because it kept being vacant and tenants would leave. And so, you know, everyone has that kind of property, right? Yeah. So we go to closing with money. Like, we bought this property for like 40, 50 grand and we had to bring money to closing to get out of this deal.
Oh my goodness.
We were the happiest people because it was no longer our problem. He was happy, the guy, because he was getting a good deal. And I'm thinking to myself, this guy has no freaking clue what he's doing. He's going to get his ass handed to him. That's what I'm thinking. So I see the guy about a year later at like a real estate meetup. And I, you know, we told him like, look, dude, this is a hard property. He's like, oh, I'm good. Okay. See him about a year later at a real estate meetup. And I'm like, hey, man, what's going on? I'm like, how's that property? He's like, dude, that thing's a moneymaker. And I'm like, you're kidding. I'm like, yeah, whatever. He's like, dude, I swear to God. He goes, that's my best property. The one on Mohawk, like the one we sold you? He's like, yeah. I'm like, no way. He's like, I'll show you the numbers. So we start walking through the numbers. I'm like, I don't understand. How did you do this? He goes, Steve, you had the wrong business model for those types of properties. You were trying to run it this way. That's not how you run them. And I thought to myself, how many properties out there have we not run correctly? It's four walls and a roof. The business model, just like your short-term rentals, just like when people do these, whatever they call them, arbitrage and all these stupid things now, it's the business model running inside of the four walls and the roof that make or break the business model. It's not the four walls and roof. If it's you know, comfortable, safe, compliant, all that bullshit, at the end of the day, what is the business model? And I realized, man, I'm running the wrong business. Wait, I don't even have a business. I didn't even think of it as a business. And that was my aha moment. Like, this guy took a property that I was losing money on, same property, and he turned it around and it was his highest cash flowing deal because he treated it differently.
That's very powerful.
That was a big lesson for me.
Yes, yes. And I, back at the beginning of mine and my husband's investing career in long terms, we did the same thing. We looked at a bunch of houses that were not going to cash flow as much. They like needed some work. And then we looked at a flip like that was beautifully done. And it was so much cheaper than these other ones. And we're like, oh yeah, this is perfect. Let's do this. And oh my God, that was just a nightmare. I think when we finally were like, all right, we got to get rid of this. We got to sell it. The tenant was mad. She'd been evicted and like out, she was out, but she was staying across the street at her cousin's house or something. She broke in and peed all over the carpet when we were trying to sell it.
It's crazy. I mean, the shit we go through, right? I mean, everyone always says you should write a book. Well, I did. I wrote a book on my stories because it was like, I've got a lot of stories, but anyways, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. But again, I've learned that I thought to myself, how many deals did I pass up on that today I'm killing myself, or properties that I flipped that I should have held on to because I was like, I was short-sighted because I wanted the money. And I should have gone for the long term, because I mean, there's this one property I drive by all the time that I was going to buy and I didn't, and it's gone up like 3 times in value. Like, it's tripled. And I'm just like, it's like that thing, you get off the freeway and you look at it, you're like, ah, damn. Like, oh man, like that's the lesson of me being short-sighted. Like, oh, this is a horrible deal. It's like, dude, just wait 20 years from now, this thing's going to be worth a lot of money, whatever. I don't see it. Well, I didn't look at trends. Right. So as an investor, I think it's important to look at data and it's important to look at trends. Where's migration going? Where's traffic patterns going? Where are jobs going? Where are employment companies coming to? And when I coach people, these are the things I look at. I'm like, we've got to watch the trends because the trends will tell you a lot. People are just so busy in their little bubble. They don't step back at that 30,000 foot view to look at the trends and the data.
That is like everything you've said today has just been like, I'm like, yes, yes. So I think that's really translatable over to short-term rental too, because right now everybody's like, okay, where's the next market? Where's the next market? And they only look at what the purchase price is versus what the potential income is. And they're not necessarily looking at the other things, like the other types of data of like, who's going to rent these places? What's the trends there? So for example, like, Gulfport, Mississippi. Everybody was saying Gulfport, Mississippi was going to be the best. Like, that's the next short-term rental place. Well, I grew up in Mississippi, and we don't go to Gulfport to the beach for a reason, because the Mississippi River empties into the ocean right there. It's brown. And everybody's like, well, Gulf Shores, Alabama is great. This is going to be the next Gulf Shores. And it's not, because Gulf Shores isn't as close to the river. So it's nicer. It's a nicer beach. So, but everybody was only looking at purchase price versus potential income when there were only a few of them there and they weren't looking at everything else. A bunch of people went and bought over in Gulfport, and then they're like, why is my place not renting? Like, well, it's not a place that people really go. So it's that what you just said kind of translates over. You have to look at more than just what the purchase price is versus what you can potentially rent it for. You have to change that business plan. So you're not renting to vacationers in Gulfport. You're renting to people who might potentially be there on business or something, but people were thinking it was going to be this next vacation destination, which it's just not. So that was totally applicable to short-term rental as well. So very well said.
Well, whether it's short-term or multifamily, these are businesses, right? So you've got to have a business model wrapped around that particular type of business. It's like, I tell people all the time, like, I've done flips, wraps, wholesale, seller financing, you know, I've done all these different types, but these are just tools in my toolbox. So when I look at a deal, I'm like, okay, is this a hammer? Is this a rake? Is this a broom? What do I do with the deal? And how do I get that to align with my goal? Everybody that calls themselves a short-term rental person or whatever that nickname is for them is, you know, what they do is they look at everything. Everything's a hammer. So all they're looking for is nails to pound into a wall. It's like, yeah, but you need a broom. I don't know how to use a broom. I only know how to use a hammer because I identify as a short-term rental guy or girl. I'm like, no, you need to identify as a business owner and you have a toolbox. And when you come and look at a deal, you go, okay, what tool do I bring out of that box? Am I gonna wrap it, seller finance it? Am I gonna wholesale it? You got to take time to educate yourself. I'm not saying don't be focused on a skill set. I think it's important to be focused, but I also think it's having that narrow focus and not being able to have the education to look at other deals. You're probably missing a lot of opportunities because, you know, if you looked at the properties in Gulfport or somewhere else and said, you know what? Not really a short-term rental, but maybe it's a midterm rental. Maybe I could flip it. Maybe it's just long-term rental, whatever it is. Maybe it's a partnership, a JV. Maybe I could sell or finance it. But if you don't take the time to learn those different tools in the toolbox, everything is a hammer or everything's a nail because all you have is a hammer. And so, you know, everyone's jumping from city to city to city. It's like, dude, there are thousands of transactions that close every single day in every single city. They can't all be wrong. Business is going on. Maybe if you're the one erratic running around to these different markets, maybe you don't have the right business model for what you're trying to accomplish because you don't have the goal.
Wow.
Just my thoughts.
What's everything you say like, bam, okay, write that down. Yeah. Okay. So Steve, we are coming to the end of the show. So I've got three questions that I ask all of our guests. We're going to have you back for a part two because, like, you got a lot of knowledge.
Happy to be on.
Okay, so question number one, what advice would you give 20-year-old Steve? And I think we've actually spent the entire show talking about that, but what, like, in one or two sentences, what do you think?
There's two main things that I would give 20-year-old Steve. Number one is pick your end goal and destination. Have it very, very, very clear and defined, and know it as your mantra, and know that that is, like, you know, you call it your North Star, and take massive action, massive fucking action. I don't care if it's wrong, go and get it done. I look at myself a lot, you know, a lot of people in the airline industry know me as the guy who, you know, does real estate and speaks and coaches. And they're like, what's the difference of you today, COVID, airlines laying off, and you 9/11? I'm like, the only difference is one word. It's action. I took massive action after 9/11, and I was like, nothing is going to stop me from doing that. So that's two things, I would say.
Very good advice. And along those same lines, but slightly different, what advice would you give a new investor who's interested in getting started today?
I would give them the advice of running, making sure the numbers make sense. You've got to, first of all, you've got to educate yourself. Have a lot of tools in your toolbox. Take more time to educate yourself and learn everything that you need to learn before you get out there. Because real estate, you know, when you're out there, you're playing with the big boys. You know, when your money's gone, it's gone. So take your time to educate yourself and do transactions based on data and numbers and not gut feelings and emotions.
Also very good advice. And last question, what is your favorite book that has impacted your mindset?
Boy, I've got a lot. One book I always go back to is Grant Cardone's 10X. I like Grant. I like what he, you know, you can say what you want, but the guy's a grinder. He's a hustler. He's nonstop. And I like that. I've got to respect that. So 10X really helped me think a lot bigger. And it got me out there taking a lot of action. And to me, that was a, I don't want to say life-changing, but it definitely got me thinking a lot differently than I do now, or did then, I should say.
I also love that book. I'm a huge, huge Grant Cardone fan. So is my husband. And, you know, everybody wants, like you said, say what you want about him. Like, everybody's got an opinion. But he, at the end of the day, he's good at what he's doing. And yeah,
when they talk about you, that's kind of the goal.
Yeah, isn't it? All right. So Steve, where can our audience, if they want to like find your coaching, which I'm going to go sign up for it now, your coaching, your book, they want to follow your content, where can they find you?
Yeah. I mean, obviously the standard social media, if you go to Instagram, it's Rosenberg Steve with a Z. And you'll see all the places I fly to. I was just in Tokyo 2 days ago, speaking at a mastermind in Colorado Springs today. They can go to Facebook, obviously, YouTube. I have a YouTube channel. I've got my podcast, High Stakes with Steve Rosenberg. And you can go to my website, steverosenberg.com. It's R-O-Z-E-N-B-E-R-G. I am the kind of guy that if someone messages me, I respond. I get a lot of people that are like, is this really you? I'm like, who else would it be? Like, to me, it's like, I just think it's respectful. If somebody asks me a question, I answer them. That's just me. Maybe I'm different than most people. I don't know what other people do. Maybe I'm just not that popular and I don't get that many questions, but I'm always available. Like, to me, you know, I think at some point in our lives, we've got to start giving back. And I think it's important as an investor, as an entrepreneur, as a coach, if somebody needs help, I think it's good to help them. I don't need to make money to help somebody. I think I think as entrepreneurs, we should be a little bit more selfless and not selfish. And I think selfless, and a lot of guys I know, good friend, you know, Brandon Turner, Taro, all these guys, they all give back, right? And I think it's important to have that mindset of giving back, because at the end of the day, we're a pretty small group of entrepreneurs. There's not a lot of us. And I think it's important to stick together and help each other to be successful.
Awesome. So y'all go slide into Steve's DMs and you will get a response.
You will get a response. Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Steve, so much for coming on, and we will catch you later.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, Che, you can hit the